in post.
Fix it in post. That's what we do with everything.
I just had to get that out early.
Sure.
Steven, I did do something today that was at your, what's the word I'm looking for? You inspired me to check out something that I had never seen. And that was 2001 A Space Odyssey. I had never watched. I grew up in the middle of a hillbilly town in Florida, so it wasn't necessarily in the stack of VCR tapes.
I'm sure it wasn't. Well, in the days of VHS, it would have been one of those extended play VHSs because it wouldn't have fit on a normal SP runtime. That's how old we are.
No kidding. So it was definitely something that I had no idea what it was until I actually saw it, and it was super captivating. And before I forget, welcome to the Tragedy Academy, a show created to bridge societal divides in a judgment-free zone using candor and humor. My name is Jay. Gary, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing great. I'm excited for this episode.
Absolutely,
this is awesome.
I am as well. That voice that you heard is Stephen V. Stone. He is he created In Saturn's Rings, Astrogenesis post-production, which is in post-production, which you did Upload, and you did all on an iPhone 11.
That's correct.
Which was super cool. I want to ask about that one because I feel like there's a whole community that probably got super triggered for a moment there. So I was like, this is dope, and it's all about interpretation.
Absolutely.
Like there was so many ways you could interpret it, and I was like, oh, I'm going with this direction. But then Lunatic back in 2003, and then Someday Saturn?
It was just Someday.
Just Someday, okay. And then that was in 2012.
Yes.
Man, what an amazing, amazing background that you have.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's, you know, I'm sure you guys can relate. You know, there are things that people like to do and there are things that you have to do. And filmmaking for me is just a thing. I tried to not do it at a point in my life, but it's like, nope, this is what I have to do.
I love that. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are? And why you came on the Tragedy Academy, and then we'll just kind of go from there.
Sure. So today I'm a filmmaker reinventing myself after being disabled with something called complex regional pain syndrome. And the best way to summarize it is the lowest part of the journey, which was it took like 8 years to get diagnosed after years of misdiagnosis.
How long did you sit in the fibromyalgia bucket?
I was there for, I don't know, 6 months.
Yeah.
I probably should have been there even longer because that's at least in the ballpark.
Correct. It's a lot. That's why I asked. Yeah. I'm like, because generally you're either left there or you get blessed with a diagnosis that gives you some kind of understanding for what you have going on. Yeah. So I'm not trying to hijack this, but there's a lot behind those types of diagnoses, especially the invisible ones.
Yeah, but the primary diagnosis for a while was just power through it. You know, man, after surgery, you have pain even. But so that's a whole other story. And then the last neurologist before diagnosis was convinced I just needed spinal manipulation via a physical therapist. Like, that'll fix you right up.
Crack your back. You'll be fine.
Crack my back a couple of times and you'll be good to go.
Those videos scare the bejesus out of me. Like, on social media, when I see them snatching someone's head off their shoulders,
this was a top neurologist in the area. This was not a chiropractor. This was a top neurologist. And fortunately, at that point, I was starting to trust my gut. But when I got the diagnosis, I went to my primary care doctor at the time, today was at my new primary care doctor because this old primary care doctor, and bear in mind, if you Google CRPS, you'll probably see that it has this casual name, the suicide disease. What she told me, she said, well, I've looked up this online and I'm going to suggest that, she didn't use the word suggest. She says, what I want you to do is go home and Google stuffing envelopes at home, because I believe this is going to be the rest of your life on your couch. That was the non funny low. I mean, that was a bad day, but I didn't tell anybody about that
Who sets a benchmark for somebody in a situation where they've received a diagnosis and they've been trying to get on their feet and, you know, move forward? Who sets a benchmark? Like, you can only stuff envelopes. Who the fuck gets off the couch for that? Like, if that's all I get, why the hell would I even move? Right? That's a horrible thing to do somebody. It's a limitation mentally up front.
Yep. But, you know, the blessing is, you know, my wife is from Detroit. She's had a congenital birth defect from birth. And so she's been a great role model and example to me. And
you got to suck it up.
She's been inner city Detroit. So it's like, nah. So hold on a second. So, okay. That was you'll have to fix that one in post too.
It's called the Tragedy Academy. It's baked in.
Exactly. so, you know, she's from Detroit and that was such a great role model for me. And when I got home, you know, I had a bleak 24, 48 hours. And it's like,
it's respectable.
No. One, whatever I do, it has to be film. If I'm going to stuff anything at home, it's going to be film. It's going to be boxes of movies to collectors. You know, let's get, but it's like, well, it's not a question of what I can't do. Cause I can make a list all day long of what I can't do. And that's just going to get long and boring, properly give me carpal tunnel in my right hand. But let's make a list of what I can do. That's the interesting list. And the first thing.
And watch it grow.
Exactly. And then it was like, well, I can write. And it's like, well, what have I never studied formally? I've never studied screenwriting formally. Well, if I can write, and I've been doing this for a long time, I can teach. And then that, and as you said, I've been watching that list grow and grow and grow. And one of the things that I had on that I would have put on the can list, well, I can't make films anymore. Well, that's off the table. But a year later, I made a short sitting on my couch. And the thing is, I love, there's my mantra now is really distilled down to my favorite quote from Orson Welles, who said, "The enemy of art is the absence of limitations." So it's like, and I've noticed this going back to school and attacking my art. It's like, if you're in great health and your life is good and you got plenty of money, well, I got a leg up on you, literally, because I got a whole bunch more limitations than you, which really fires my creativity. And it does actually work. It just
don't tell me what I can't do.
Don't tell me what I can't do, because immediately the human soul is wired when I can't. Then I'm going to figure out a way that I can. And it's going to be a more creative, more personal, more authentic can than if I on Easy Street. You know, it's kind of like that. It's George Lucas making Star Wars when everybody said, "You can't do this. We don't know what it is," versus making the prequels when it's like, "I can write myself a blank check."
It's an amazing way to look at it. And, you know, I love the fact that you're taking those winds of, you know, hate and, you know, limitations and all those things, and rather than being blown out, your flame has not gone out. Your flame actually goes brighter, like when you blow on embers.
Absolutely. Right?
And that's what it makes me think of. A lot of people don't make that pivotal change in those moments. They tend to succumb to, you know, those hateful words and those limitations and the things that are being imposed on them because other people don't want to see them succeed, because that means they have to get up themselves. But that's a whole nother story.
It is.
Right?
But
and I appreciate that you did that.
Yeah, and I think it's like you take that part of yourself that's the stubborn, petulant child that I don't want, because I never like to go to bed early. I didn't like to eat my vegetables. But that is the, like, I'm not gonna take this as handed. You know, you hand me this. You know, for a while, I even thought of changing my business name to the Lemonade Factory. Like, we're just not making lemon. We're serious about making lemonade from lemons. It's not just a casual one day we're going to do that. It's like, this is what we do now.
Yeah. I love the stance.
I love the quote. You know, that's my life. And I've worked on $10 million TV shows where we have pretty much everything and then nothing. And the creativity that comes out of the nothing and just brainstorming and what can we put together. And, you know, that stuff comes out way cooler most of the time. It's way more fulfilling, you know, and it's like your own personal stamp on it, not, you know, some big lighting company or some big, you know, production that comes in and there's 30 people doing everything. It's like you get dirty, build it, make it yourself. Like, that's way better.
I know. I really feel that. And I know, you know, what the feeling that you have after you create out of that space. It's like, it really feels like you have channeled and birthed something that is of value.
I agree with this. I think that if you were to take your right arm and tie it up, you would discover that your left arm was much more capable than you actually knew. You're going to find new features, new ways, new things that it can do over time. You're going to exercise new ways to approach everything, right? And I think that that atrophy on one side creates strength on another if you pay attention.
It's absolutely true. And I think when we were kids, they would always read the story of Helen Keller and you go, blah, whatever. But, you know, I think that's the tremendous value of what you guys are doing, because we need to hear lots of people talking about, this is not some little moral fable that's told, because so many people in life basically have their legs kicked out from under them, emotionally, spiritually, physically, all of the above. And it's either what's going to take you down or it's going to make you something that you never thought you could possibly imagine.
You get a pamphlet with your diagnosis that contains limitations for the rest of your life, which is bullshit, right? You're growing to a mold. I bring up this analogy all the time. It's like growing a watermelon inside of a clear plastic mold that looks like Frankenstein's head, right? When it's done growing, it comes out that way. But was it ever intended to be that way? Fuck no. It could be a whole entire watermelon. It doesn't need to be some shape that was given to them. Don't tell me what I'm going to fucking become. Let me do it on my own. Just tell me what to watch out for on the way with my new limitation.
Yeah, and I think the other big part of that for me was, you know, when I was given the kind of like very like guy, like just power through. But the interesting thing about CRPS is a lot more women get it than men get the diagnosis. Probably a lot more men are getting it, but they're the ones who just, they get taken down. Addiction,
suck it up.
Suicide. They're the uncounted, because there's such strength when you have a diagnosis. Right now I got this great pain management doctor. I'm a cyborg. I'm Bluetooth enabled. I have an implant in my spine that has these two leads that because I was fully disabled, I was bedridden from the pain. The standard option is we're going to give you a bunch of opioids and a bunch of gabapentin.
Don't take
everything.
And then that might be bad shit. It'll give you Parkinson's.
It gives you everything. Then we got to give you another whole round of medications, because it's all max. So it's maximum opioids or more. It's maximum gabapentin dose or more. And then long-term opioid use makes you more sensitive to pain. So I got this implant instead, and it takes about 2/3 of the way. So, you know, I'm now partially disabled. But what I discovered there is, when you allow yourself to be vulnerable and fragile, when it really puts you in touch with what a fragile thing, you know, what that balance is. Because, you know, one day I was out playing volleyball. The next day I was injured in a chain of dominoes that led to this. But in there is a different kind of strength that we're not taught, especially
in the Western culture
and in the male side of the world.
Correct.
It's like, that's not seen as strength to accept that, okay, I have this vulnerability. I have this thing. I can't pretend it's not there, but it's a source of new insight and new strength that I would have never gotten in touch with before. And so now, and the big thing, this big gift at this by not trying to like, well, I'm just going to take a bunch of pills and pretend that it didn't happen to me. My brain is not only unaltered, it's almost sharper because
it has a new playground to work in. I call it a playground. I don't call it a cage. I don't call it a box. I call it anything like that. It's a new playground. It's got a different sandbox. It's got a different set of swings. It's got a teeter-totter or whatever. It wasn't on the other, but it's time to play. I always talk about baseline, right? You have to find your baseline for your new normal. Like, why the fuck get mad at one third of yourself that's going to feel that way every day when you wake up? That's like yelling at the sun.
Absolutely.
Right? Just set yourself a fucking baseline and try not to think about that 30% as best you can.
And to be honest, that's not easy to do.
Two hip surgeries, four right ankle, three kidney, and a couple blows to the head by my own self. So
I know.
I get what it is.
Yeah, exactly. There was about a year where I was just yelling at my leg. It is yelling at the sun. And then you go like, well, and the thing is, I'm on this experimental medication called low-dose naltrexone that is it's a really powerful anti-inflammatory. What it does is it tweaks the endorphin system. So it kind of fooling the pain system. But one of the side benefits is that it kind of reduces all your inflammation in your system, including the flow of blood to the brain. So you can't take a very lot of it because your dreams will be way too vivid, but it literally sharpens the mind.
Oh my God. We're going to have a whole bunch of people asking you where you get those pills.
Yeah. Who's your guy?
That sounded amazing.
It's all over here. The other thing that real low dose, naltrexone at its original dose, it was one of those accidental discoveries by somebody not looking for it. It was originally given to opioid and heroin addicts.
Correct. I was going to say, I thought that was an addiction medication. It also works with alcohol and other things like that.
So I'm getting the microdose version of it because some researcher somewhere stumbled. If you microdose, it has these anti-inflammatory properties. And the microdosing also just kind of gently reduces cravings. So because I have some balance issues, it's not great for me to drink alcohol because I have a dead nerve in my right leg or whatever. But in fact, my doctor last week said to how you're drinking any alcohol. I was like, oh, I forgot about alcohol, which sounds so weird. But it just doesn't cross my mind anymore. So it's like there's all these silver linings.
Cravings leave your system because those are ways to satiate a pain that we have inside. They're not actual things that need that fulfillment. Yeah. It's a fear response.
Film school back in 1991 and never gotten a degree. And when I decided I wanted to teach, it's like, I'm going to go back to school, finish my undergraduate, and I'm going to graduate with a master's degree in screenwriting in May. which is pretty unusual for someone with CRPS to even attempt to go back to school. So that's a huge milestone for me. But I've noticed, yeah, because I was worried, like, I'm the old guy with all these young kids who are going to have a sharp
brain. I have no idea what my age is. No matter what room I'm in, I'm an idiot and I embrace it now.
But the thing is like, I've noticed there's just a little sharpness I have, a little quickness that I thought it'd be completely the opposite side. It's like, and then you got all that, you've got all this experience. I've got stories to tell. I've seen it.
Correct. You have pain to put on a screen.
Yes.
No junk, no soul.
Because that's the fun part of this is drama can be self-indulgent when it's behind the camera. That's my analogy. But you put it in front, it's magic.
Yeah. So,
Gary, you've probably got a ton to weigh in on this as well.
Yeah, it's for one, the Bluetooth thing is amazing. Like, I pride myself in being able to hack into Bluetooth devices all over the place.
You can hack into me.
So, like, all of a sudden, it's going to be playing.
What's your favorite music?
It's going to be playing Young Jeezy, My President Is Black, on repeat.
Explain that in the grocery store.
Yeah, that was it.
Well, the wild thing is the controller I have for my device is literally like a 10-year-old iPod Touch.
Nice.
And it has, the only hack protection is you have to be about 3 inches away to make the Bluetooth pairing.
You're like, what are you doing? Get away from me.
Yeah, I'm trying to pair with you. Hold still.
It was a childhood. It was a childhood dream to be a cyborg. I get to be a cyborg.
What is it? I remember the first time, because you love science fiction.
I do.
Right? And I wasn't exposed to science fiction until I joined the Army and I found myself reading when I was in the middle of nowhere doing nothing, in the field for training and stuff like that. And I stumbled across Dean Koontz, right? And I fell in love with his version of Frankenstein. And it was all about this cyborg, bizarre, futuristic, combination of spiritual and technological and all these things, which I believe that's what evolution is, because we're constantly saying we're not part of the group. We refer to ourselves as something that's looking at nature. Like, no, jackass, you're nature. Like, plastic is your fucking shit. Yeah. Like, that's all it is. It's a byproduct of you, like everything else. But I loved how they portrayed that story in there. And I saw that in like some of the stuff that you're doing. I'd love to kind of take a little bit of a turn.
Sure.
And talk about some of your film work that you're doing, the stuff that you have coming up, because my God, dude, you can see the pain in the art. And I don't know if that makes sense, but when somebody's sitting there dedicating themselves to something so hard, you can see that you have painstakingly put layers together like I've never seen.
Well,
talking about Saturn.
Yeah. So in Saturn's rings, that was something that started when I was a healthy, abled person and ended when I was an undiagnosed, just hanging on with my fingernails when I finished that in 2018. But what we were talking about earlier, Jay, about, when you do something out of that place of calling and you don't have the unlimited resources, I got into that thinking, well, this might take me 3 or 4 years, never dreaming it would take 15. But if it hadn't taken 15, I wouldn't have met the 100 volunteers around the world that worked on that with me. And it ended up making huge changes in their lives. But a guy that was just going to donate the early website for the project, he was so inspired by this process that he quit his career and is now a leading painter in Spain. And then a guy who is a pharmaceutical chemist who graduated from MIT, dreamed of doing something with his life. And now he's a leading fellow at the Jet Propulsion Lab studying the surface of the moon Titan.
Jesus.
It's like, that's what happens when you just...
You inspire through authenticity.
Yes.
when you are your true self and you stand up and actually accept yourself for who you are without those limitations, there's a byproduct of that. You shine so brightly that other people can take cues from you. They can step out of their comfort zone. They can be themselves in your presence because you no longer hate yourself. We don't hate ourselves. People love us more and they take cues from us. We think that we need to impress them, but the impression that you need to give them is that you love yourself, and then they'll follow in suit. They'll light their fire, and the next person will light their fire, and you end up with people doing some of the most amazing things on the planet. That's why I love this show, because you become a lighthouse. A lighthouse does its job. It stands up and acts like a lighthouse. It was made that way. It shines its light, and people will always take their cues from it.
That's a great analogy, because, you know, when Autumn was talking to me about this show, because I had an instant connection with her because we both had been on those
kind of amazing journeys. Woman.
Yeah, she is amazing. And she's already become a huge part of my life on a personal level and a professional level. And when she was telling me about this, it's like, wow. I mean, I'm just so honored to be here. First, again, I just have to say that. And this kind of work, to me, is you always want to feel like what you're doing is really making the world a better place. That's our, you know, I don't know if you know Nick Cave, the musician, but I was reading a thing where he's talking about art is not about inspiration. It's our jobs, you know.
Thank you.
Someone, you know, a doctor or fighter or whatever, they don't go, am I inspired to fight fires today? It's like, no, this is my job. This is the way because the world is.
You got to bankroll your, unfortunately, we're in a society where you have to bankroll your love.
Exactly.
You have to put something in there, either create a machine to support your art or create art that happens to get monetized, luckily, because it's authentic and it moves up that path. Those are your two choices.
Exactly. And that's how I see it. My job is to be an artist, and that's where this whole limitations comes in, because it's like, I don't have to struggle for inspiration as much as I did before this happened. That's the truth. And it took me a while to get to that point and to appreciate that. And yeah, if a little devil came along and said, I'm going to take away your CRPS with a May with that, and you'll feel better, I would be tempted. But what I would think about is like, well, I'm going to lose this. Do I really want to lose this? Because I remember what it was like before. And this is like,
have you ever seen glasses go backwards in prescription?
No.
I think you will keep that for the rest of your life and deserve to have it taken away at some point through the advancements in technology that we have.
Yeah.
I believe that you would be just as effective a creator, if not better, because you would now have a new set of tools in your toolbox and the old set of tools that you haven't had to use for a little while, and you would be doubly effective.
Yeah, you're right. But these new tools have served me well.
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because In Saturn's Rings was certainly a landmark project for me. But I'm now moved on to be able to write science fiction like I wasn't able to write before, coming from this place, putting all this stuff on. And you talked about Frankenstein. I finished, that was my first year master script, was a direct sequel to Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Look at that. Everything happens for a reason. And I tell you, there's no reason for that book to stick out to me. I'm not like Mr. Koontz and I have to read all those. Stopped reading them forever ago. Had a couple of, you know, series that I liked for a little while. But that particular book stuck out to me because I think we're evolving. I think that art as a whole is maybe at a standstill for a moment, but we have a new landscape that we navigate that is actually in favor of people that are at home or in a convalesced state or where they're disabled and unable to make it to the stupid box in the middle of, you know, the city that everybody sits in to do the same shit that they're doing at home. technology has changed the game quite a bit. The remote worker is something that is to be reckoned with, right? That talent pool is big.
There's pushback too, though. You know, like them bombing that building in LA, like those guys are, you know, they're not sitting around making shit on their iPads. You know, they went out hundreds deep and put their mark, you know, the old school way. And that got a ton of attention. So I think, like, you know, I love all aspects of it, but there's pushback to the digital, and then painting becomes more popular again, like vinyl becoming more popular for a while, or using old instruments. And like, I think it sparks different things, which I think is really good.
No, I totally agree. Because I feel it's interesting. I kind of have my, I'm in both those camps, because I'm collaborating with a filmmaker who likes to make films old school style. And I do on his stuff, I'm the visual effects artist, the sound designer, sound mixer. And he is
really,
yeah, his film just got into its fourth Academy of, qualifying festival, and he's working on a feature that would be shot old school with everything in camera. He builds these amazing models. Incredible. It's after the show, I'll send you, because it's not officially online, but I'll send you a unlisted link, as long as it's still posted publicly yet.
See, aren't you all jealous listening right now that we get to see this?
Yeah,
this
what you'll see is, and you can share, he's got a publicly available trailer, but you'll see these incredible, they spent years making these scale models to do a period piece about an astronaut, a Mercury astronaut.
Holy shit.
Yeah, cool.
And working with that kind of stuff is just such a joy. And that's what he wants to do on a feature level. And I would be the visual effects supervisor on that, which is a huge dream, because those old movies from the 60s, 70s, 80s that were, you know, motion control models and everything done in camera. I would, to be the visual effects supervisor on that would be a dream. And that, again, has all come out of this. And at the same time, all this, on the flip side, this being able to create major works at home for me. Mm. You know, I remember Francis Ford Coppola once saying, he said, there'll be a day come when a 9-year-old girl can sit at home and make a movie. And
here,
for a filmmaker to be like a novelist or a painter, I still love getting in a room with a group of people and that collaboration that happens. It's fun. There's no AI in the world that could ever replace it. But there's also some things that I have in my head that made the old school way would be a $250 million film that probably no one ever is going to fund. But if I have the ability to express that, just like a novelist or a painter, it's a magical, that is the magic that we live in right now that's just coming into being. And yeah, people are going to use it for bad things, but people are also going to do amazing things with it.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree with you. Jim Morrison was once recorded saying that in the future, there would be one person making all the music standing in front of giant groups utilizing a computer or something of that nature. And we have that.
Yeah.
The, you know, Steve Aoki could tell you.
I think it's an eventual decorporatization of art. So
yes.
You'll have the old school, because I got a big stack of vinyl records, and we love listening to vinyl here. But you know, it brings that kind of personal physical touch back in, because vinyl has come back as an independent artist world. It's not come back as a big corporate, like, you know, it's not KTEL greatest hits type vinyl world we live, where, you know,
The now CD of the 90s.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is I'm starting to see this in movies, because the same little short film. So he's going to get a 4K disc press by the small little boutique 4K disc. So he's going to be able to send out 4K discs of his 15-minute short, which I think is just fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
badass.
You
didn't have to get a distributor or sign a deal or any of that stuff. You just do it, because that technology is now come down to be.
That's hard.
Yeah.
It's a whole different thing.
It's the little things.
You guys have behind you, the artwork you have. It's just like you make your art, you share it, you enjoy it, and there it is.
So I'm a late in life artist myself. I went through, growing up poor. They don't give you a effing saxophone or anything like that. That's not on the priority list. No. I did the army thing and, didn't really have the chance to get into art at all. Went to the corporate world and, played the roles, said, okay, got to wear a suit, got to do this, and stand in front of rooms and talk about non-existent shit or whatever it is and play the game. And then one day, I believe that you have to hit your knees to plant a tree, right? And that's what you did. That's what happened with me. I hit my knees. I planted a tree and I grew a new self. My new self was one that embraced who I am. And that is the kid that was told to shut the fuck up, that was always singing, that was playing music constantly when he could get a hold of it and being annoying and all those things, because that's honestly what I'm supposed to be doing. That's what I'm doing now. And has led to so many door openings in so many different ways. I'm working on so many different projects with Gary. I'm working, in music, I'm working in videography, and I'm getting a chance to do things that I didn't even know existed for me. I'm 18 again, right? I'm graduating school of 40 something years and then moving forward, right? This is chapter two. And I think that a lot of people will look at a disability or an injury, especially when they're taken down, as the end, the final chapter. This is it. Now it's memoirs and what I used to be. It's a chair. It's, there's comfortability in the victim chair. It is a recliner with cup holders and a little TV tray in front of you and all these things. And you get to talk about how great you were with no expectation of getting back up. You get to sit there and just pile fucking shit around yourself and then talk shit about the people that have it good.
Yeah, Uncle Rico.
In your eyes. Yeah. You Uncle Rico yourself to death. You're so right on that.
Yeah.
Right? You have to embrace the fact that you need to step over your own shit and move forward. Right? Why sit there? It's such a choice. Find a different you, like yourself. You found a new you, new chapters. I bet you can tell people that you probably have skills now that you didn't even know were an option.
Well, yeah. And even having what a core artistic expression for years, even when I'd write my own things, this is what I told every collaborator in person. I'm not a writer, but I've got something down there. And then this happens, and I'm like, well, I can write, but I still was not sure I'm a writer. So I get into a screenwriting program, and I've made a lot of films. I've written shorts. I had a couple of features that I had written, but it was like, I just need to get this idea now. Somebody else will be able to polish it and fix it up. Turns out I'm a writer, and I'm a good writer. And
bro, that's why you kept going back to write.
Exactly. That's why I kept going back to write. And we tell ourselves a lot of little lies like that, that until you have, like you said, until you fall flat on your face and find out that you're not going to stand up back in the condition that you fell down. It's like that shock to the system is an opportunity to go, wait. In fact, one of the classes I had, I was asked a whole series of questions. What's the biggest lie you tell yourself? What's the biggest lie you tell others? And you got first like, it's not really anything. Then like 2 days later, it's like, wait, let me make a list. It's like
life is a lie.
We have all these little stories that we say, like, I'm not this, I'm not that, or I'm this, or I'm that. But well, wait, have you really looked and check those off and go, is that really true? Because we all return to these things. And so it's not just screenwriting. So I've written this script called Frankenstein on Mars, because what I've done is written the direct sequel to the Mary Shelley's original Frankenstein.
I'm in love already.
And the inventor of all of this, that's not cool, but she did. So I've written a direct sequel that's kind of Bride of Frankenstein meets Raiders of the Lost Ark. But it's, she wrote another novel called The Last Man, which is a post-apocalyptic novel set in the year 2077 about a plague destroyed Earth. See, I don't like that. 1830s.
I don't like that because I firmly believe that those that are allowed to create the least inhibited are the ones that are writing our future. Things come true off the screen all the time in time. And it's the ones that put pen to paper that are not restricted, that aren't painting the inside of a mold or painting a picture looking over their shoulder at the approval that they're getting. That's the one that's going to show up on the screen that we emulate and move forward in time. Star Trek much?
Yep.
Right? Like it's a
Terminator 2.
Like you have that TENS unit or whatever, that new TENS unit on your spine for a reason. Because
science fiction because
it challenges it.
Science fiction is the way to talk about where we're going. And I love, I especially like genre science fiction because I'm not a big like preaching to the choir or being on the nose, but if you entertain people, but you're authentic about your passion, like one of my favorite movies is Aliens from 1986, Sigourney Weaver.
Huh. Nice.
And that is about corporations messing around with nature and bad things happening. It's the story of our times. But when you're watching it, you're not like, well, I'm watching a serious documentary. You're just like, I'm enjoying the crap out of this movie.
That comes with age.
Yeah. But
I feel like we learn more about the documentary the further we get into life and we look backwards because we didn't have the correct 3D glasses at the time.
Exactly.
And we gain those with years. You look back, you're like, ooh, that was a little predictive.
Yeah. And so my Frankenstein on Mars is, you know, it's a fun kind of adventure, action, retro sci-fi story. But when I wrote it, it's like, this feels like Pulp Fiction. And a lot of people don't know that Mary Shelley, who I think is one of the most unappreciated geniuses of all time, because she basically invented the entire worlds of science fiction and horror, film, music, literature, all of it is from her book, Frankenstein. She didn't write that. She's before H.G. Wells. She's before Jules Verne. You know, because she was just an 18-year-old girl, it's like, no, it's hard to get a movie like this made. But what can I do? Well, I could write Pulp Fiction novels. I could write 9 of them, one for each planet. Yes, Pluto is still a planet. Forget what everybody else says. Pluto is a planet. Don't mess with my Pluto.
Yeah, you can't just decide it's not a planet.
But what is it supposed to be now? I just know there's
some
no
kind
Pluto
of like
planet.
A dwarf world, or they have some. I don't care.
They just made up another name for some shit. Like,
yeah, they just made up another name. But when they did that flyby of Pluto, if you Google pictures of that recent flyby of Pluto and you look at that, it's like, that's a planet. It's got mountains and surface and ice and, you know, it's big and it's round. It's a planet. If you're watching Star Wars and that floats by your screen.
Is it going around the sun or another body?
Yeah, it's like.
If it's going around the sun, it's a planet in my mind. I don't know. I haven't looked into this. I heard we were shamed a long time ago as a generation for believing in Pluto like it was fucking Santa Claus or something. But Gen Z makes fun of us for this shit. It's kind of funny, like when they do, but it's true.
I don't know. The good thing is there's some pretty good scientists that kind of actually agree and like, it's still a planet. So anyway, I'm gonna work on 9 Pulp Fiction novels, and then those can be graphic novels too. It's like
Walking Dead did it.
Absolutely. And it's the idea is like, don't think about what you can't do. think about what you can do. And that for a filmmaker, just do it.
There is something said for that. There is only one thing preventing you from success in life, and that is action.
And action is a habit.
Correct. And it's easy to create if you do what you feel most compelled to do as a human.
Yeah.
Your art is your art. If that's what you're compelled to do, it will become successful for the simple fact that you're doing what you're supposed to do.
And for me, you know, again, about the whole limitations things, because a big thing that came out of my CRPS was it reduced the amount of time that I could throw at something. Because getting up and brushing my teeth and getting breakfast, and feeding the cats, everything takes me 5 to 10 times as long as it did before. And then my level of exhaustion, whatever. So the number of hours, because I used to be like, I'll throw 90 hours or 100 hours a week at this particular problem. I can't do that anymore. But here's what comes out. When I'm taking all the time to do all these things, I get a gift. I get the time to think, to daydream. And so when I sit down to be creative, I've done so much of the work.
You've been creative for 3 hours before that.
I've done so much of the work, and it's this kind of free expansion. I'm a big David Lynch fan, and he's big into this, like, letting the mind go and flow and ideas. And so when I come down, it's like, and I've got a little thing on my phone so I could just capture whatever it is so I don't lose any of that stuff. So when I sit down, I just like, I use this program called Milanote that I'm just a gospel preacher about. Because I just capture all those ideas and then I just bring them in, and what I get done in 3 or 4 hours of creativity now is way more than I would get out of 10 or 12. Because that, a lot of times when I used to try to be creative on those long 12, 14 hour days, often those last 8 hours, it's like I'd come back the next day, it's like, well, this is garbage. I just got tired and I got punchy and I forgot what I was doing earlier. But now I find that I write faster than people who are writing longer, because I'm not taking tangents. I'm not getting lost. I'm not having to go back and constantly rework, because that skill. And when I was at Astrogenesis, that's in post-production. And the reason it's still in post-production is because I went back to school and I don't have the time to do post-production in school at the same time. But when I shot that, I was already, I found these wonderful friends. I was like, I can only shoot 4 hours a day, and it's going to be 2 days on, 1 day off. Then we take 2 weeks off, which is a complete ass backwards way of making a movie. When you're making a zero budget movie, it's like, we're going to shoot 18 hours a day and we're going to try and get it all shot in 6 days. That's the way everybody does it. And I did it well, here's the thing. I've shot films myself out the old way, and I sit down to edit them and I'm like, oh, well, a lot of this just sucks.
You're just trying to get through
shit twice.
Yeah, but we're just tired and we're out of energy, and we started just things like missing focus, missed the audio. We didn't get, you know, that performance was great, but we didn't frame it and the focus went off and the boom drifted off, all that kind of stuff. This film,
hour 17 of the day is not ever going to produce top-notch
So
work.
This thing where I'm just shooting 4 hours a day and we took our time, when I sat down and looked at the footage, it's gold. I got everything I wanted in that shoot the first time out. It's the first time as a filmmaker I've ever done that. And so if the technology came by and I got the complete cure, I'm not going back to the 12-hour creating or days in the 80-hour artist works. There's nothing good that comes out of that for me, and I suspect that's true for a lot of other people in it. And I have a lot of friends and colleagues who still working on those 18-hour days on, you know, 6-8-hour turnarounds, and they're driving home at night, falling asleep at the wheel. It's like, that's not what life's about.
I've been close. I fell asleep in my garage with the door closed. I fell asleep driving home, like 18-hour days, 10 days, 12 days in a row to shave a few dollars off the budget. But then you have to go back and reshoot a bunch of shit anyway. Exactly. So then it didn't even save you any money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, no, thank you. And I find that lack of time creates more purpose out of me. The lack of time doesn't give me the ability to sit around or the affordability to daydream, to overthink, because we already have the answer. The art is already done. It's just a matter of putting pen to paper,
absolutely,
right? And getting it up on there. The other shit is just doubt.
Yes.
All that shit is doubt, because you could have sat down with 5 hours or 3 hours and done it the first time. It was all of the limitations you put on yourself as to what other people might think of the end result. That's what, when you're creating art to an audience, you're fucked.
Absolutely. And, you know, to me, that's the wonderful thing about this show is you're giving the people the gift is that if you're listening to this and you don't have a disability and like, what can I take away from this? It's like, Well, first of all, we probably have disabilities or areas that you're challenged in, you're not even thinking about or don't want to think about. But even if you don't have the obvious one, it's not a bad idea to go ahead and make some limitations. When you sit down to do whatever it is, like just cross a bunch of stuff. You got a bunch of tools or a bunch of software apps, just wipe a bunch of those out. If you know, one limitation that we all have, a disability we all have, is we don't have $50 billion to do X, Y, or Z. But don't moan about that. Say, why don't? So let me imagine how I would do this if I don't. You've got a whole part of your brain that's sitting there unused because you're not challenging it. You said blowing on those embers. That's a muscle you can do. And that's my, you know, that's where my passion is, where I'm looking at on the teaching side is I specifically want to create opportunities for disabled people, whatever the disability is, your emergence, physical, you know, trauma, whatever the disability is, filmmaking is a world that you can enter. It's positioned itself. I mean, Jay, you know, this is positioned itself as it's physical. You got to work so hard. You have to have these kind of physicality skill sets to be able to do it. But that's not true. You can certainly work that way, but there's a whole other world and there's a lot that can be expressed and done with a totally different mindset. And
the pandemic helped a lot of people with this.
Yes.
I think the necessity is the mother of all invention.
Absolutely.
I believe that it opened so many minds that had never even had the opportunity to embrace their art. It allowed them to grow. And it also allowed minds to come together and connect over distances. And man, if collaboration isn't fucking king, right? That creates so much more art.
Well,
and that,
you know, that's a beautiful way to circle back to In Saturn's Rings, because In Saturn's Rings, I didn't have a single volunteer here in my 100-mile circle. And they were scattered all around the world. And
that's okay.
And so you're right. The pandemic, you can look at this as some big lost period, or you can look about it. This is a global all. Here's your limitation. Here's your disability. What can you do?
The pandemic was a peek behind ego's curtain.
It allowed
us to stick a stick in the spokes of the proverbial tire that is life.
Yeah.
It gave us an opportunity to sit on our ass and realize that we're repeating rabbits. All we do is do the same shit, same shit, same shit. And we never looked to the left and the right. When we all sat on our ass, had nothing else to do, we had to do what? Become kids again. You start sitting around fucking daydreaming. If you have to sit around long enough, you become a kid in a sandbox. You start to reconnect with all the things that you felt as a child and most compelled to do. And there is a group of people that came out of that pandemic and grabbed a hold of that. They embraced it. They realized going in, it was a character, and coming out, it's their true self. And that means they get to embrace their art. And I do believe that one of the things we need to do is provide a safe space for people like that to continue to create. And we need to put more power or empower our artists throughout the United States or out the world with protection.
Yeah.
It's not all about doing a manual labor or a task that's defined by the system. Without our artists, we have no love. Without our artists, we have no future, because those are like the ones that I said earlier. They're painting where we want to go. So you have to give them a space to work in. If you're corporate, stop throttling people. Stop holding them in a box. Let them go ape shit with markers in a, you know, in a corner, and step back and find out that they've all doodled together a fucking giant piece of art, right? Give people that opportunity to fucking go crazy with their art and protect them. Don't make them scared to get sick, scared to get a disease, scared because they don't have the ability. A lot of artists don't have the ability to have that corporate umbrella that provides them with some kind of medical care that gives them the ability to what? Breathe. Fucking breathe. You can't breathe as an artist.
You're talking to me because I can't breathe right now. I know it.
Yeah. No, it's, I agree with 100% with everything you said, because protection and safety and support, again, are not abstract concepts. They're day-to-day realities that need to be there to create art. I mean, you know, my wife, she's a visual artist, and this has been a part of our lives. We always had the conversation, well, it'd be real smart if one of us were corporate and one of us weren't, but, you know, it's both something we had to do. And every day we're looking at, well, how can we support, protect, and make this happen? And it's
empowering.
It's not easy in this culture, in this world, because it's not set up that way and it's not valued that way. But to me, that, you know, you talked about the pandemic, and I totally agree with that. What got people through the pandemic? Music, film, podcasts. Without those, we have people rioting in the streets and burning down the earth. That's what happened.
100%.
Yeah. It's amazing how we went straight to art for our soothing place. Yep.
And it's like cool now, you know, like growing up, like people at some point, it wasn't cool to paint or draw or write or try to make movies and shit like that. Like no one talked about it. Now, maybe there's some music, but like
that was the weird kid.
Yep, now the cool kids make content, you know, something the really, you know, yeah, the influencers are the cool guy.
Always has that notebook.
I always had the notebook my whole life. And, you know, I still do, but I think like now everybody creates shit, you know, or at least wants to, or, you know, some people do it just because it's cool. They don't even care, you know, and then the people that really care, you know, are able to have a lot of different formats and mediums to create. I think it's creativity is just going through the roof, I think. And some people hate the technology and think it's like cheating. And I think I feel that way about, or feel that way sometimes still about some things, but then I use it for something I couldn't do myself. And then I don't feel that way. So I'm like a hypocrite, you know?
A hammer is no good until it needs to be a hammer.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I think it's just, you know, you said it perfectly earlier when you said, you know, you had a $250 million movie in your head. Now you could make it, you know, like however you put that is the best way I've heard anybody really talk about it, because you know, so many limitations were financial, you know, and now creativity could get around a lot of those, which I think is, it's a big thing for sure.
No, I think it's an exciting time. And I think we need more people looking at that. It's all a positive. It's all inclusive. When they invented photography, painting didn't go away. In fact, painting, I heard a photographer talking about this. It's like, he says, I'm not freaked out by AI photography, because he pointed back to painting. Before photography existed, if you were a painter, you ended up being forced to paint like product packages. You know, catalogs and whatever. They had to draw all that stuff because people couldn't photograph it. And,
boy, that'll put your toe on a shotgun quick.
And when photography was invented, what happened? Impressionism, modern art. Art explodes in these new incredible directions when photography comes along. Art didn't just keep going. And photography and music and film have these same opportunities. It's like, rather than slogging out the same shit or serving the corporate master, you now have this opportunity to truly just, like you said, go crazy as an artist. Just go fucking crazy.
It's so much fun.
Because I no longer have to draw pictures of whatever's going in the corporate catalog that needs to be.
I don't want to be drawing pamphlets for my fucking life.
AI is going to do
product
photography and fashion photography and all that stuff. And someone's going to take a camera and say, oh, I'm going to do something completely different with this.
Yeah.
And there's no AI.
And that's the one we all want to see.
They're going to do something that hasn't been done before.
And the playing field's even.
Yeah, it's what the life is about.
It's like, when I started doing TV, we shot on Beta and the cameras were $70,000 and you had to have an Avid to edit this shit, which is $100,000+. And you could, you had a high eight camcorder that your parents had in the basement you could make a movie on, but that was not great. Now, like this phone right here, even though it's broken and shitty, it still can make a movie if I try hard enough, you know?
Yep.
Well, you've proven Steven.
That's actually, is the 11.
That was the thing. It's like,
How much Reiki hate mail did you get at first before they, understood your interpretation?
I'll tell you a funny inside joke. So the woman lying on the table, that's the corpse. She is a new age healer that practices.
I love it.
So she's a neighbor of mine and she has a sense of humor. And she was like, I love it. This is fun. She thought it was a fun idea.
I thought it was fantastic. When I watched it, I was like, oh, I wasn't expecting it. I was like, is she going to crack her neck? What is this weird thing? And then boom. And I saw that and I was like, oh, and then the card, I was like, this is perfect. This is absolute gold. So you can tell that you have such a creative mind. I'm glad we ended on something like that. Cause I think we can keep going for a long time. So I want to give you a chance to tell people what to look out for.
Sure.
Cause you have a lot of cool stuff coming up. I would love to have you back because I want to talk about your, maybe we do a creative hour where we talk about how you create your art. Because I really wanted you to describe what Saturn's rings was actually, how that was made, right? Because that has, it was almost like stop motion, right? And it's so many different pictures.
That's a deep dive. And it kind of needs its own hour. But uploads are great. That making a film with your phone, making a film that is widescreen, can show in a theater. That was just, friends getting together one afternoon. I just had an idea one night, wrote out that script. It just kind of came to me because I love anything with aliens.
Those are the best.
And the thing is, like, it was like, what if us Reiki people are actually aliens? That's fun. If energy work is energy gathering, aliens need energy. Why not?
It could be any of those things. It's just as plausible as the rest of the shit we believe.
Absolutely.
Everything else is a limitation provided to us. We don't know how high we can actually jump. We're told 6 feet is high.
We don't know. And I just thought it's like, and it's all how you look at it. You can look at that as disturbing and creepy, but if you're an alien and that's just like going to the grocery store to buy some eggs and hamburger meat. And
I love
it. It's like, that's how you, that's what you do.
I loved it. Everybody's got what they need to do to survive. Why can't we give them the ability to survive? It's no different than us sucking the life out of the animals around us for energy.
And the thing is, if you're a disabled artist or filmmaker, maybe you don't have a big camera and gear and lights, but you probably got a phone right in your hand right now. And that thing was 100% shot with a phone, edited it on a desktop computer, no advanced software, no budget, with friends. Small crew, shot in a day, budget $0.
And a perfect execution.
Well, thank you.
Right? Art survives everything.
It does.
It honestly does. And when you have passion and purpose in a moment, you create things that withstand time. I don't believe that art is subject to time. I've never thought so. I think that it stands the test of time because it's one of the true thing that we are.
Yeah, art exists in like the ethereal plane. And,
correct.
And that's our job as artists is just to open ourselves to that plane and let it flow through us.
That is, you are correct. It is our job. It is our duty, to be who we were created to be. Otherwise, it's a slap in the face of whomever or whatever made
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. 100% true.
Well, Steven, I genuinely appreciate you. I think you're a very talented and gifted artist. Think Gary hit a tech difficulty and fell off. He's going to be upset. We had a past guest, Dallas Fuston, that is a friend of Gary's, who's a magician and works in AI art. I want to link him up with you. You should listen to his episode. I'm in Vegas.
Holding you guys along. I think you're doing God's work, for lack of a better phrase. This is such a gift to the world and what people need to hear. And so inspirational.
That means a lot.
And it's, again, such an honor to be here.
Genuinely appreciate that. And I'll say, Gary, can you say, have a good day?
It's great talking to you, Gary.
All right. Remember, everybody, be cool and keep learning.